Welcome everyone to episode 96 of the Bodybuilding Down Under podcast. Today you're joined by three out of four hosts, myself, Lawrence and DY. Unfortunately, DC couldn't make it today due to technical difficulties, but usually I'd be reading out some reviews, but unfortunately we haven't received any more text-based reviews. We've kindly received some other five-star reviews, but just a reminder that if you do leave a text-based review, we'll be reading it out on the podcast. So you can leave a review at the Apple Podcasts app or kindly leave a numerical review on Spotify as well. So let's get stuck into some questions. We've got some good ones here today, and I think the listeners will probably know the answer to this one from you guys, but we'll run through it anyway. So oats, cream of rice, or cream of wheat, order from favorite to least favorite. So Lawrence, I'll let you go first.
Do we count, like, because what I have done a few times this off season is I'll have like crushed up wheat bix, like made into like a porridge. Would you count that as cream of wheat?
Yes, technically. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's almost 100% wheat, isn't it?
Yeah, just with and it's 1% bix. So yeah, that's just absolute no brainer. So I'll say cream of rice is by far and away the best. I'll say the cream of wheat bix second, and then the oats third.
Can you say it correctly, please?
The cream of wheat.
Yep, there we go.
Bix. But yeah, I actually don't remember last time I had oats. Like, it's been that long. I don't know. Like, I like them, but I think that there's nicer stuff to have that's in that same category. And like, I'd rather, like, if I'm going to have like a bit more fiber, I'd rather it come from other things other than oats, I feel. Like, I'd rather have like some Milo cereal or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Great source of fiber.
It is.
It's reasonable. Doesn't quite compare to oats, but I mean, oats are good because they're an easily obtainable source of carbs, but they're also a different grain as well to be consuming with a different fiber type. So I personally try and throw in some oats every now and then.
Well, I've actually been having a meal lately because I feel like I've found what is a good amount of fiber for me. Mm-hmm. And the listeners can, you know, they can think about it for themselves, what that means for myself and my well-being. But I feel like about 45 grams a day at the moment with the current calorie intake is like my sweet spot. So then it would be like, okay, I was having like this cream of wheat bix thing. But then I was like, oh, in order to get the carbs up there, it's a bit too much fiber. So now I've been almost doing like half and half between the Wheat Bix and Cocoa Pops. And it's a belter. I'm actually a big fan of it.
So do you top the Wheat Bix, like the cream of Wheat Bix, with the Cocoa Pops, or do you mix it in with it?
A bit of both. It's more of a mix in, but today I was short on time and I was also consuming this meal in a gym parking lot in Ipswich. So I just went raw dog in with it, just added, mate, it was actually bordering on just complete pandemonium. It was whey with water, which I don't often do, just straight into the dry Wheat Bix and Cocoa Pops, like an absolute caveman. I mean, yeah, it was out of control, really. Probably didn't grow from that meal at all.
Yeah, too much.
Too much enjoyment factor, I think, as well. I think you enjoyed the meal a bit too much. Yeah. Not bodybuilder-esque of you. You should add a blended up chicken, a bit of chicken breast in a blender, bit of Cocoa Pops, mineral water.
Dark chocolate on the side.
Exactly.
100% dark chocolate, though. It can't be that 95 stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, DY's had a bit of that 100%. Had it in America, didn't you, lad? Loved it.
Oh, man, it was the best thing I've ever tasted. It tasted so good, I wanted to preserve it. So I actually spat it straight out into the alfoil little wrapper that it comes in. I said, wow, I've got to save this when I get back in Australia. Obviously, took it straight back home, cooked it on my cream of rice. Tasted delicious.
But be honest, it wasn't as bad as you thought.
It tasted like horseshit. If anyone eats that 100% stuff, they got something wrong.
That's got to be 95 or 90. That's the sweet spot, I think.
I'm thinking 70%, and it's got to be that flavored sea salt caramel flavor as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking 0%, and it's a caramel block. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly right. It's the only way it's going to go down. In my preference, it definitely has to be cream of white cream of rice. And you know, I get very large amounts of fiber in already. So like, you know, I showed the boys in the chat today, my MyFitnessPal screenshots, there was heaps and heaps of fiber in there. So I would normally not want to get that fiber from stuff like oats. So, you know, maybe it could be a close second for cream of wheat. Never tried it though. So that gets knocked down to the third. So cream of rice, then we go straight into the oats and then cream of wheat, which is cream of sheet.
Yeah. When was the last time you had Weet-Bix?
Me? Oh, probably when I was at my grandma's like 10 years ago. I remember consuming those things.
Too much fiber. Yeah. You don't want it to mess up your gut.
There was one stage I was taking the piss with Weet-Bix. Like I was just eating like 15 at a time.
You even made a cult out of it, didn't you?
It was a genuine cult. That is like some of the OG. I know Corey Merrick, shout out. He's got a Weet-Bix cult tea. That is an OG general muscle throwback.
Isn't he now the cult leader since you've left the cult?
He's had to take it over. And considering I'm not consuming Weet-Bix as much anymore, I had to leave that cult.
Mm, exactly. You're a fraud to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I escaped. I got out. Others, not so lucky.
Mm.
I think I might actually be taking over the cult soon, though, because I think Weet-Bix is going to be replacing Milo cereal for me in good time.
Mm.
We'll see how that goes. Maybe it'll be a bit
fun. Milo cereal, it's the LeBron James of cereals, mate. What do you got? What are you doing trading it out?
According to Lawrence, heaps of fiber in there too. So mate, like, why would you swap that out for Weet-Bix?
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, that elusive title of the leader of the Weet-Bix cult.
Yeah, yeah.
Won't be hard to get back either. So many people eat them.
Yeah.
In this modern age with good tasting cereals.
Yeah, it's like you're either, you know, me or Jack or 65 years old and like you've got no teeth. You're having it with warm water.
Full cream milk with a bit of sugar sprinkled on the top.
Mate, in fairness, that's a hell of a meal. That is class. But Jack, I was going to say, have you seen in the shops now there's like Milo minis where it's like small cereal but Milo syrup?
Maybe, yeah.
Think of the time you're saving in the blender, mate. You know, you're only having to blitz it once instead of probably, 15 times?
Yeah, that's a good point.
By the time you've got through, you know, the psyllium husk, the Milo, the whey, it's a lot for the, well, actually, no, it doesn't matter. He's got the creamy now, so.
Those are high-powered, too.
I had to buy a few extra creamy tubs, so I've stocked up on 14 now because it only comes with three, so you should check out my freezer.
It's just not enough.
How many are you chewing through a day? And
it's
then
a
how many
at each meal?
Anyway, I promised you guys promised we wouldn't talk about creamies, but I'm the one who.
You were the one that brought it up. You just said that you'll buy more creamy tubs. Look at him. He's deflecting onto us, Lawrence. Now, I've got to know what the hell you're doing with 14 creamy tubs. Like, how many ice creams are you preparing for the week?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people in my family that I got to feed. So, yeah, just taking care of the people. Two dogs as well. Yeah.
Provider.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
anyway, I need to answer this question.
Beef mince creamy going down for the dogs. Yeah. Let them cook.
Dog roll creamy. That's where it's at. So, honestly, I haven't had plain. Actually, no, I had plain oats in my mini cart. Last time I had cream of rice would have been at least a few years ago. Last time I had pure cream of wheat would have been quite a few years ago as well. But I reckon I'd have to give oats the number one and then cream of rice. Sorry, no, and then cream of wheat and then cream of rice. Yeah.
Like, why is cream of rice so knocked down on the list? That's what I think me and Lawrence are wanting to know here. Like, why do you have it so down on that list? You're the only bodybuilder in this modern age that isn't consuming it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Well, I'm just a new
creamy in the afternoon.
Well, I think nutritionally, it's basically just white rice, and like I have white rice at my other meals, like two of my other meals. So that's one. So I mean, I can get in another grain type by having cream of wheat or oats. I'm just not a big fan of the grainy texture as well. Like I find that cream of wheat and oats are a bit smoother texture. That's just me personally.
How are you cooking it?
I mean, I'm a five-star chef, so I cook it how it's meant to be cooked.
Are you having the McKenzie's one?
Yep.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Something's wrong with this guy's cooking method.
I just think we're going to need to make him a bowl, mate. It's, yeah, I just don't know. I think Jack, I mean, yeah, he's made good progress, but imagine if he had been eating cream of rice these last couple of years. He'd probably be a natty IFBB pro.
But yeah, it's a lot of these would have beens, like, you know, you're looking in retrospect, it's like,
coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, on the topic of pre-workout, here's the next question. What's the perfect pre-workout meal? And how long before a workout do you consume it? What do you think, DY?
You're the dietitian.
Like, what do I know, apparently, you know?
It's just the whole podcast, the answer is going to be cream of rice.
Yeah.
Because I reckon for the last, like, year and a bit, that's probably been the pre-workout meal for every single meal. So I have, like, normally, I think at the moment it's 110 cream of rice dry weight and then about 50 grams or so of whey. And then I'll have like a block of the 90% dark chocolate, bit of salt, and then bang, we're off to the races. And I'll normally have that. It probably ends up being about, well, it's normally about 40 to 45 minutes before I leave the house. Like from meal to leaving the house to go to the gym, it's about 40 minutes. So when I train at the closer gym, it ends up probably being an hour before the gym. And then if I train at Powerhouse, it's slightly over. So yeah.
So you feel confident saying that's the perfect pre-workout, man?
Yep.
That's not for you, but for everyone.
Try it and let me know. If there's anything better, I certainly haven't come across it.
I would have to agree with Lawrence. I'm pretty much the exact same. 100 grams rice flour, 400 mils water, 50 grams whey, 150 grams of berries, and then a little bit of chocolate. Not dark, of course, because I'm actually serious about it. With 1 to 2 grams of salt.
Damn, mate, those berries, they're slowing you down. That's way too much fiber.
Yeah, I would normally actually have a V8 juice with it as well, but rookie error, forgot to grab some from the shops. Not serious about it. So I've just not trained this entire week. I've just messaged Joe in the check-in today, told him no point, no V8.
What is the point?
What fuel am I? What engine am I running on? I'm running on a V2 right now. There's no point on training.
Have you ever tried the V10 though? It's good stuff.
No, I haven't.
Only from
is that an actual thing?
I mean, you tell me. You're the V8 expert, DY. Oh,
I don't know. I haven't seen a V10, but like, you know,
he
hey,
just drives one.
You add another 25% to your cup, which actually technically would be what I drink. I'm running on a V10. You know, I'll bump it up to 375 mils for my breakfast and I'll be running on a V12. I'll let you know how I go next week when I acquire it.
Don't go too crazy.
Exactly.
I think to be serious, it's cream of rice, right? Question answered.
It's hard to triumph. Yeah, it's a hard one to triumph, that pre-workout meal.
But it really depends on like what's your calorie intake, what phase are you in? Are you gaining? Are you in a deficit? If you're on 100 grams of carbs, it's going to look very different to if you're on 1,000 grams of carbs. So and also the time at which you last ate, the time of the day at which you're consuming your pre-workout meal. So essentially you just want to aim for something that ideally has some carbohydrates in it. I would say that's the most essential part of a pre-workout meal. And then second to that would be protein, the least important being fat, which I would mainly have in a pre-workout meal, more so just to one, get fat for the day in if you have a decent fat intake, but also to potentially slow down digestion a little bit if you're training like maybe more like an hour to 2 hours to 3 hours after your pre-workout meal. Digestibility also being key as well, which is why cream of rice is so good pre-workout, because it's very digestible. It's a refined source of carbohydrates, very low in fiber, so it does the job quite well in that respect. But yeah,
I would say as well, Jack, like just to actually be serious, for as much as I want to take the piss for this entire episode, the cream of rice, and like it's exactly what you mentioned, you know, yes, it is going to be easily digested, but it is also very individual. Like some people will happily smack down a bowl of oats before they train, and like that's no dramas for them. I mean, you have a look at Dirk's pre-workout meal and it's essentially like all fruit and then a whey shake. That works for him. So I think it's all going to be very, very individual. And what I would say is that, you know, yes, I agree with you. Your pre-workout meal is going to change a little bit depending on whether you're massing or cutting. But I would argue that when you're pulling calories and you're slowly whittling down the amount of food that you're eating throughout the day, I would say that is the last place that you want to pull from, like your peri-workout nutrition in terms of like your pre-workout meal and also potentially intra-workout carbs. I would say keeping that as close as to what it is in the off season is paramount. And I would also say, you know, a similar sort of thing when you're potentially like planning meals out, for example, like, you know, maybe you're leaving some calories to the side because you're going to have dinner out later in the day. Like, okay, all well and good. But I think that rain, hail, or shine, you should be trying to keep the pre-workout meal the same because you want that to be the most predictable in terms of how you feel. You don't want to be having like random foods here and there. And then it's like, oh, you know, how am I going to feel today in terms of like bloating or distension going into it? Like, that is probably the one meal where you want to know exactly how you're going to feel every single time you have it, which for that reason, I do think it makes sense to pretty much keep it the exact same if you have found something that you know works well.
I'd even probably say like myself and you, like we pretty much didn't pull like probably nearly anything from our pre-workout meals last prep. I tried to keep it the exact same the entirety of the time. And like what you mentioned, like the predictability of the workouts when you're actually having a good feeding. But not only that, if you're able to aid in a better training session, that technically is going to burn more calories as a whole, especially within a preparation phase. If you maybe run lower carb before you actually train, training session might not be as good, might not burn as many calories. Maybe down the line that might equate to maybe a calorie drop here or there. So trying to keep like, you know, that pre-workout fuel as high as possible and as tolerable as possible, even in the darker stages of prep, I think is definitely quite beneficial.
Do you have an intra DY?
Yeah, I do. 40 grams of like a liquid carbohydrate, the Gentech pure carbs. I normally just put some diet right cordial in there a little bit.
That's my guy. Yeah, no, I'm the same. I have the Gentech as well. And actually,
I did used to have the power to perform. I did used to have that P2P. My last, that was really good, but it came to a point where it was actually very hard to source. But I did want to have like, since my workouts were quite long in prep, I did want to have like a little bit of protein intra-workout. And yeah, it worked a treat. Mm. I really did like it. And it was flavored as well. So I didn't need to add anything else to flavor it.
Yeah, the P2P is actually a great product. It's sort of like your all-in-one intra-workout. And I suppose the only thing is that if
only
you do need
$100 for 10 serves.
Yeah, exactly. But
if you use the discount code, Lawrence?
Well, that's what I was going to say, mate. Like, let's hypothetically say that you were looking to acquire some supplements and you were going to, say, spend $100, like Jack mentioned. You could have $100 worth of supplements sitting in your basket when you're shopping online at www.powersops.com.au. And if you type in three simple letters, B, D, U, what does that do? Bang, money gone off the total. It'll be down to $85. Now, I'm not a mathematician.
I am.
But that is a 15% discount. And if you want to make the most of that discount, there's only one thing to do. It is to go to PowerSops online, www.powersops.com.au, and use the code BDU because that is what will acquire you that discount.
Well, I'm actually a mathematician. I'm really not. And just by running those calculations in my head, you're pretty much making money from the Power Sops there. So
makes sense.
I'm thinking that they haven't gone bankrupt at this point from the amount that they're giving out.
Yeah, I think it's just because they offer so much value. You know, they're paying their staff in value at the moment and that happiness.
And their customers, of course.
Yeah, exactly right.
Mm. Well, I think we've exhausted that question. So let's move on to the topic of cardio in the off season. So I know two out of three of us are doing cardio on quite a regular basis. So let's chat through that. And I mean, I'm doing cardio quite regularly. I know DY is as well. So I'll throw this over to you, DY.
Yeah, so I implemented it for a couple of reasons. The first one being, obviously being sedentary and realistically not being able to get a very large amount of steps up each day, I've kind of opted for cardio for a more time efficient way for me to get like cardiovascular activity in, more or less just for overall health. We know there's like a direct correlation with 8,000 plus steps onward, kind of scaling up. The more you do, the more benefits you get in regards to longevity and overall health. So that's one thing that I've opted to do. So now I pretty much hit a base amount of steps of 8K daily alongside 10 minutes of 15 on 45 off hit. And the second reason there is, sorry, it will have a little bit of a cross transfer into some of the higher rep sets, which might be a little bit more cardiovascular demanding, where sometimes, you know, some people might catch themselves out on the pendulum or leg press, and you might be doing a 15 to a 20 rep set, and you'll probably find like they're huffing and puffing, and they can actually do more, but their quads are, well, they're like the cardiovascular system will probably give out before their actual quads do. They just find that they can't compose themselves. They can't brace just because they're breathing so much. So those are the two reasons why I've got it in there.
Yeah, similar reasons for myself. I think after having been in a surplus from early 2021 to late 2023, so almost 3 years, like didn't do too much cardio. My steps were usually quite high, like usually around 10 to 15,000 each day, but I definitely reached a ceiling of like how cardiovascularly fit I was. And I was noticing that, especially as I pushed up above 90 kilos, partly just due to my genetics associated with body fat holding point and set point and where I felt most comfortable, but I think also due to cardiovascular fitness as well. So yeah, I've incorporated 2 cardio sessions a week now and already sort of noticing the benefits of those, like feeling less puffed in the gym. I feel like my metabolism of energy has improved as well, if that kind of makes sense. Like, and I think that's also indicated because this is the most food I've ever had at this body weight. Like I'm still around 86 kilos and I'm on about 4,000 calories. So like my maintenance at the moment is literally 4,000, which I don't think it's ever been this high. Yeah, not that that's necessarily a good thing for me, because I know that as I need to bring body weight up closer to 90 kilos again, it's going to be quite uncomfortable. And we'll see how that goes, though. I'm hoping that the increase in cardio will have a positive impact on appetite, which I think it will. And I'm also trying, this is turning all about me now, but I'm also trying like a higher fat approach as well. Like my fats are like 90 and 100 grams on training days and rest days, respectively. So that's been interesting. More dark.
Perfect. We'll wrap that up here. Jack's gone keto, and make sure we chuck creamy in the title again. And I think we're going to have about 1 million clicks once again.
Yeah.
Huge money.
What is the modality, Jack, that you're doing? Because I saw you in the pool today, mate.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep it interesting, to be honest. Like I've got a little bit of a back and hip niggle as well. I was originally doing the bike and that was, I think, causing my hips some distress. So I need to kind of take that a little bit easy. So I hopped in the pool today, which was good. That was nice. I mean, maybe the only downside of the pool is that it carries a little bit more upper body fatigue, but I don't think it would be overly significant. And yeah, I may or may not be doing even some running as well. So yeah, that's been interesting to get into it, but I'm honestly enjoying it. Like growing up, I never enjoyed running. Like I played team sports, which involved running, but I never enjoyed running full stop. But I'm just being very, very careful to not do more than one bout of that a week, keep it to no more than 5K, and to refuel very heavily on those running days. Because I mean, 5K is very pretty insignificant.
What sort of times are we looking at?
It's pretty average at the moment. Like it's
10-minute kilometers, wasn't it?
Yeah, we'll tell that to AJ because that's basically a walk. Yeah, but no, it's more like 5.5. I think I'll get to 5 quite soon though, which is not. It's, I mean, mediocre for a runner.
Get a little bit of that novel stimulus within the cardiovascular system.
That's right.
I was going to ask as well, did you notice any difference with like training performance after implementing the cardio? Because I know a lot of people like cardio, like, you know, it's going to take away from your training sessions. You might not be able to do as much volume. Did you actually notice any differences at all?
Definitely no negative influences on training. Again, it's hard because like I am genuinely quite lean at the moment, and I've actually gotten leaner as I've maintained 86, which I think is probably just a carry on effect from body weight stabilizing after the fairly aggressive mini cut. But I would say body weight and body fat is not in the most ideal spot for training, but no, I haven't noticed any negative impacts from cardio. Yeah.
Did you notice any differences in regards to, like, you know, being able to eat a large amount more, like probably like substantially more than what you'd probably think you'd be able to eat while implementing cardio? Because I did. I noticed that it was actually once implementing even just a slight 10 minutes a day, like I had to boost my calories by a very, very large amount for it to actually elicit realistically any growth, where without the cardio, it was actually holding, it was actually increasing quite steadily with a lot less calories.
Yeah, I mean, as per what I said earlier, like that's 100% what I found. Yeah, almost to a, like on paper, you wouldn't think that a 10-minute HIIT session would, it doesn't burn that much energy. Like it burns a couple hundred calories. But then again, you're consuming more than a couple hundred calories extra food. And again, that, like I do question, I saw this recent reel by John Jewett, and he was talking about the benefits of energy metabolism for associated with increase in cardio. So maybe that has something to do with it. So we'll move on from this question and we'll head on to, what do you think about the Northern Territory holding a bodybuilding show next year? Lawrence, anything off the cuff that you think about that?
Mate, the Darwin Classic, I think that has a nice little ring to it. You know, obviously if they go with that name, they're going to have to pay us a pretty hefty price to get that, because we've trademarked it, and obviously our legal team in Delaware will take care of that all for us. But yeah, I think it's cool. You know, like, I don't know, the Northern Territory, it's like all of the sport in Australia, it just gets forgotten about. Like, doesn't have an AFL team, doesn't have a rugby league team, doesn't have a cricket team or a football team. It's like, very rarely, I think, are there even one-off games held there. So I think, you know, if you can bring more, you know, sport, I guess, to an area like that, I think it's beneficial for the community. And yeah, why not? Like, it would probably be a pretty fun trip. You know, you could go up to Darwin, do a bodybuilding show, see a few sights, enjoy, you know, the 35 degrees and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Sounds like a holiday to me.
Where is this place again? I've never heard of it.
DY is not concerned with anything that is outside of the Brisbane CBD.
Oh.
Actually, until recently, busted.
Within 200 kilometers, we've now updated that, all right?
Yeah, wider radius, cast a larger net.
Well, with that being said, as long as they put on a good show, the athletes are taken care of, like, you know, there's a decent amount of competition within the actual show itself. I don't expect it to be pulling numbers like Brisbane and Sydney, but with that being said, it doesn't mean that they can't run a good show, have some good quality competition, you know, and take care of the athletes.
Actually, the Outback Classic, come on. It has to be that. It literally has to be. Like, surely.
When are we putting on our own show?
Well, I think
bodybuilding down under.
We're the no-brainer as far as the lead sponsor for a show like that. But don't get it twisted. We won't be contributing at all financially, but we expect our logo to be plastered on everything. So we'll have to discuss that. Yeah, we'll just have to discuss that. We'll get the lawyers involved. But I think we'll make it work.
30-second plug on the podcast, I think.
Oh, mate, I mean, there's brands just clamoring for some airtime. Yeah, it's not easy. What do you think, Jack? Would you be heading up, you know, maybe 2040, dust the pros and trunks off, do the Outback Classic?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, I'm sure BDU will sponsor me a flight there and some accommodation, so it's only fair. I'm sure you guys will
contact
me as well.
Company card and all that, you know. Yeah.
But no, I think it's great that Northern Territory will hopefully be holding a show, because as you said, Lawrence, like, it doesn't get the exposure given that it's a state which unfortunately maybe doesn't have quite as many competitors as the other states, but also an opportunity for the people living there to partake in a more local show. And keen to see how it goes over the coming months with what gets organized for it and how it plays out.
I have heard some whispers about this from some people, and from my understanding, it's actually just going to be like a standalone show. It's not necessarily going to have like a specific affiliate in terms of like ICN or INBA or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects things as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I think if anything, it's good. Less politics and less, I guess they can be more flexible with how they implement it. So Next question. This one says, discovered bodybuilding in my late 30s. Can I still be competitive? What do you think, DY?
I definitely think you can. I think now with there's a very large amount of divisions as well. So you can, you know, still be competitive within your actual divisions that in your age categories or whatnot. Alongside that as well, a very, very large amount of top quality physiques that come about now, easily over 30 years. You look at any single person on the Olympia stage, and I think probably like 95% of the open bodybuilders, you know, the men's physique competitors and all of that are probably going to be over 30 years of age. And in that pretty much will correlate to natural bodybuilding as well, arguably probably even a longer time frame, to the point where you would even see top quality physiques even past that age. I definitely don't think there's an age cap, but do I think there's probably an age where, you know, you probably got the best crack at, you know, taking an overall? Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you can't take that overall at an age that's younger or over. What was Brian? Does anyone know how old Brian was? He would easily be over 30 years of age.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, and it depends. Like, obviously, if you're starting at 30, you are on the back foot a little bit, but doesn't mean that you can't make significant progress. You tick the boxes for multiple years on end. You've still got a very, very large run there, even starting at 30 years of age.
Mm. Yeah, I think, I definitely agree with that. And I mean, regardless of being competitive, like, if you enjoy it, then why not do it as well? Like, bodybuilding isn't all about winning. I mean, it's nice to win, but not everyone can be competitive because it is a genetics. It's very determined by genetics. So, and obviously genetics and hard work combined is where people triumph and being smart about it. So, and I think training age is key. Like as DY said, like if you're literally starting training at 30, yes, you are going to be on the back foot. But if you've got good genetics and you've got a good work ethic and you're following a solid plan, then you're going to make some really good results. And also, but if you have been training prior to that, like if you've either been an athlete or you've just been in the gym and you haven't been bodybuilding, but you've been doing still hypertrophy focused movements, then for sure, you may as well have been a bodybuilder anyway. It's just going to transition now to competing and prepping and maybe following a more structured off-season approach.
I think if you are starting a little bit later as well, probably don't muck around with it. Get straight into a coach, like, you know, try and make up on some of those lost years that, you know, you might have farted around with at the younger ages. I know I, for a fact, would have wasted a couple of years of my newbie gains just doing dumb stuff, not getting a coach, not educated, and, you know, learning the hard way. So jump in, get a good coach that you gel with and, you know, see how far you can take it.
Will you be looking at doing that now, DY, like starting to like sharpen it up a bit?
Yeah, exactly right. So I've talked to Joe and I said, hey, man, it's actually time that we lock in. Now, all these other times, man, I've been running at 50%. It's crazy to think. You don't want to see me at 100. I've actually just put the limiter on it. It's like, you know, when you get a car speedo, like they kind of cap how fast the car can go just for other people's safety. Like that's what I was doing. I had like a self-limiter.
Yeah, no, I think that's smart, mate. Because that's the way it sort of works at HFS. Like there's an entry level guy named Joseph. And then once you're ready to step up to the big leagues, I hear there's another guy who works for him, but like kind of Joey actually works for the other guy. It's messy, but yeah. Anyway, DY's on board. It's time to cook.
Mm, exactly.
And maybe I'll have to jump on board then with this other coach.
Yeah, perfect, mate. I think that's a good call. And just let AJ know that it's been real, but you it's time to holler at a real boss.
Yeah. Cream of rice straight on the meal plan though.
100%.
So any tips to help manage the pre-comp nerves? Can you think back to that first time, Lawrence, of getting on stage? Did you have many nerves?
I think that even like in subsequent seasons, like that first stage showing, when like, you know, you've competed before, but it's been 3 or 4 years since you've stood on a stage in front of like a whole room of people. And, you know, like that's still nerve wracking. I think the first time you do it for the year, because it's just so foreign, you know, it's like someone who's getting on stage every week, you know, in Broadway, they're not really probably getting nervous anymore because they become so accustomed to it. But as bodybuilders, like, yes, we compete, but it's not like you compete every weekend, you know, so I still think you're probably going to have a little bit of nerves for that first one. But I think it is very much dependent on your personality type. Like I'm someone who has always been quite outgoing. Yeah. Like I really have always enjoyed like public speaking, like used to do debating and stuff in school, public speaking competitions, stuff like that. So I always have enjoyed and like really relished that performative element to bodybuilding. So I would say that I'm probably a lot less nervous than most people on stage. But I think that's where, you know, nerves at the end of the day are a good indication that you care about what you're doing, because you don't really get nervous about stuff that you don't give a damn about. So nerves, they can be very powerful, but I think that's where you do need to slow yourself down and try, be present, try and, you know, soak it in a little bit, because that first division on stage will just fly by. You know, like before you know it, you're through the quarter turns and you're already hitting like your muscularity poses and you're like, oh my gosh, like it feels like I've been up here for 5 seconds and I'm nearly done. So I think that, you know, once you get onto stage, just sort of looking out, looking at the judges, you know, make sure you actually like intentionally cue into like what the MC is saying so that you recognize their voice and like what you need to listen to. I think all of those things can be pretty helpful, and just trying your best to also cue into that stuff. Like when you're waiting in the wings, like when it's your next turn to go on stage and you're watching the division before you, start to almost like imagine yourself out up there and, you know, have a think about what you need to do. Because by the time you get up there and you sort of get in the bright lights, it can feel like it all just flies past you.
Yeah, some really good tips there. I think one thing is as well, like what you touched on there, Lawrence, if you really do care about it, you've given it a red hot crack, you're going to be nervous. It's something that you truly, truly do care about and you put a lot of effort into it. Last thing you want to do is go in there and shit the bed. Like, you know, that is exactly what you don't want to do. But at the exact same time, one thing that is probably the best thing for nerves is obviously putting in the work. I think knowing that, hey, I've given everything for my training sessions. I practice my posing. I've done my walk on stage. I know what it like it's meant to feel like. I put in the work. And I think having that level of self-belief in yourself, especially after you've ticked the boxes and you know you've done everything you could, you've listened to your posing coach, you've listened to your coach, you got your routine down backed. I think that gives you a very, very good indication that, you know, these nerves are here because you've actually put so much effort into it, but also they're probably something that you don't realistically need to worry about too much at all.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think I was going to mention that point of just practice and being confident in the work that you put in. I also find that maybe some people might be, the concept of being nervous might be more detrimental to people at like around where we're at now, like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 10 weeks out, or the anticipation of being nervous. But by the time you actually get to stage, you're not as nervous, especially being there backstage with everyone. It's nice camaraderie, depending on which federation you do. But I find that the ICM backstage area is always very nice. And
well, me and Lawrence, last season, we had both of our swords backstage and we were just in the lineup, just like practicing swinging, almost like we were cricket practice. And then like, I would obviously get down on the ground, like fake like he had broken my knee. And it was just kind of like we were trying to put fear into every single competitor that was in Lawrence's lineup, because you knew they look good. They go behind the curtain, couple of swords start flying in there. Next minute, they're missing a competitor.
Yeah.
Bobito. Where did Bobito go? We don't know.
Yeah. It's like a shot out of Game of Thrones, you know, just like the clanging. Obviously, I'm yelling quite intensely, bronzed up, ready to go. You know, I've actually brought every trophy that I've ever accumulated over the years, including, you know, my fourth and fifth places from 2018. So stack them up there. And, you know, it's important for them to see those fourth places, because like, wow, this guy's resilient. And, you know, he's kept coming back again and again.
I didn't think you'd taken a fourth place. I thought it was only first and seconds.
Yeah, no.
Oh, mate, I've seen a fourth place. I've seen a fourth place. Don't worry about that.
Oh, there it is. Damn, hit me where it hurts. No, I have, I think, a couple in 2018. And then...
Wait, No, never mind. I won't bring that up.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fine, Jack. Last. That's what he was going to say, wasn't it?
Huh. No, dude, I was going to say King of the North.
Mate, King of the North. Yeah, King of the North is staring at me. And we'll always have the unbeaten season in 2020. The one without a blemish on it. So we can hang on to that. But yeah, the King of the North was a special one.
Well, this next one is apparently exclusively for you, Lawrence. Not sure why, but it says, I don't feel a muscle when I train it. Any help? Back in particular.
Far out. I feel like I'm just being like hunted down on this podcast. Maybe D-Y is just trying to take the piss. Dude, I was like, I'll ask Lawrence this. He's never felt his back on any exercise.
Yeah, they call me flat back Betty. Like, I don't want to say it on the podcast, but if you're just going to point me out and you're just going to hate on me, you know, see, this is what happens, listeners. Like, you know, I delegate these questions to probably the best person that's going to articulate it across the platform for you consumers. And, you know, I get bullied for it. Like, what am I going to do? You know, I quit. See, I'm out.
See, this is what happens. You know, DC's not here. It all falls apart.
Well, at least I'm not copying it today. It seems to be you, which is
yeah,
quite novel.
Yeah.
Quite nice, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in fairness, Jack, yeah, I don't know what happened with the Canva the last couple of weeks. It's just been, it's all auto-generated. Like, I just punch in a few keys and it's just like, oh, okay, Jack's on the chopping block again this week. Except for today, it was down. But yeah, no, I would say that, you know, the whole mind-muscle connection thing is, you know, you can really get into the weeds about, like, am I feeling it? Am I not feeling it? Is someone focusing on trying to feel it too much? And that's where I would sort of, you know, consider that for certain exercises, the goal is not to necessarily feel the target tissue as much as possible. Like, okay, if you're doing a single arm lat pull down, yep, you want to be able to feel your lat, you know, every step of the way. If you're doing, you know, a conventional deadlift or a barbell back squat, you know, do you need to feel, you know, like a squeeze in your glutes on every rep? Do you need to feel like your quads are on fire at the end? Not necessarily, because there's just so many muscle groups that are actually contributing to that movement. But what I would say is that if you are struggling with mind-muscle connection, I think that, you know, your tempo is going to be quite important to make sure that you're actually using the target tissue to move that load and potentially taking out any momentum that may have crept in. I also find that it can be really beneficial to spend time at either end of the range of motion spectrum. So some people have reported that, for example, like the length and partials have really helped them with their mind-muscle connection, particularly things like the back, because they're really feeling that tension on things like rows and pull-downs and pull-ups. But I also think there's value in potentially doing like some pauses in the shortened range. Like if you are really struggling to feel your lats, for example, you may even want to pause for a 1 or 2 second count at the bottom of a pull down or at the end of a row. And yes, you know, is there any benefit to pausing in the shortened position? Probably not massively, like in terms of the hypertrophic stimulus, but we're thinking about these things not just in a vacuum. You know, we're thinking about that in the context of someone who is trying to feel that muscle better. So I think to summarize, you know, yes, there's a few things that you can do using some pauses, maybe exploring either extreme of the range of motion, slowing down your tempo, but then also just don't get too carried away. Like you don't want to be that guy in the gym who's always complaining that he doesn't feel it. And then at the end, you're just using absolutely no load with these extremely slow concentrics and eccentrics and wondering why you don't grow. So you don't need to feel it on everything. But if you're struggling to feel certain things, then those are some things that you might want to try.
Mm, perfect. You got that on video there, didn't you, Jack?
Yeah.
So, well, we'll crop it and just say pause at the shortened. And there's
all I
the
heard
next
was,
real.
Yeah, shortened partials only. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. And we just keep puzzling the words together.
No, don't tell Milo.
Yeah, it's going to be a breakup.
Yeah.
So on the same situation, it's like, first thing I like to do is like look at the exercise that you're doing and what is it meant to be targeting. So ensuring that you're actually like what Lawrence mentioned, like using the target tissue to actually move the load. Good example of this is, for example, someone like bicep curling a row, or are they doing a pull-up where they're using a majority of their biceps to actually move it? Like you can do certain exercises like this and bias other tissues, even though it's not technically meant to be that way. Like I mentioned, like a lot of people would, like even like a pec fly as well, like realistically, if you wanted, you could use probably a large amount of bicep and not much pec if you've got absolutely horseshit form. But that's a different story. Next one there is like, are you actually getting a pump in the muscle that you're trying to train? If you're getting a pump within the muscle, chances are you're probably doing something right. Next day, do you pull up sore, especially if it's like the first ever time you've done this exercise? If you pull up sore in the desired muscle group after maybe only doing 3 sets and that's the first time you've ever included them, probably a good sign that you're you know, trending in the right direction. And then is there actual tension that you're feeling within that lift, in that muscle? It might not be burning as much as what you might get on a leg extension, but can you actually feel the tension within your lat if you're doing a lat pull down, or is it all in your bicep curl? And like what Lawrence said, a good way to maybe do this is maybe doing a shortened portion of the lift for maybe some of your warm-ups if you don't want to include those in your working sets. So maybe you might be able to do two warm-up sets where you actually do maybe like 15 reps with maybe like a 2 second pause in the short and the lengthened, just to get a bit of blood flow there, get that so-called feel, and then that way you can transfer that over to your actual working sets. And then hopefully by addressing all those points, you'd be able to maybe fix your form and feel a little bit more in your in the desired muscle group.
Yeah, I mean, they've only got 50 points to work through there, so should only take a few weeks, I reckon, to start feeling it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's good stuff. We're going to have to build them. We're going to have to build them for this one, listeners. So, yeah, if you've made it to this point in the pod, like, we'll put the PayPal details in the episode description.
It's only fair. Yeah. Anyway, that pretty much wraps up this episode. Please leave us a rating or review if you feel so inclined. And we'll catch everyone again next week.